comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. It is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, and it's the show where you matter. We're here because you have a right to know. Are you familiar with a movie called Patriot Games? Very popular movie from a few years back. Well, you know, there's a lead character in that movie, Jack Ryan. And Jack Ryan is played by Harrison Ford. You probably remember this movie. Well, there is a real person that character is based on. And that real person that Jack Ryan character is based on appeared on the Alex Jones radio show yesterday. Now, I don't normally listen to other radio shows. I don't even listen to mine, except while I'm doing it, because I just don't have time in my schedule. And so normally I don't listen to or watch any other shows. I just work. But I got so much email in my inbox. It was there waiting on me when I opened it this morning. Telling me that I absolutely had to go listen to this show where this guy was on Alex Jones' radio show. And there were links provided. And my inbox was just, it was full of people saying, you have got to go hear this. So I did. I decided to block out some time and listen to it. And made me a pot of coffee and sit down and listen to the entire show. Folks, Alex Jones, I know, is a controversial figure. He is somewhat of a lightning rod, as all talk hosts who deal with any kind of controversial material will be. But whether you like Alex Jones or despise Alex Jones, or if you fall somewhere in the middle, doesn't matter. You really ought to go and listen to this show from May the 3rd in order to hear that guest. That guest, as I said, is the person that the Jack Ryan character is based on. And he's very real. You need to hear what he's got to say. I won't spoil it for you. I'm just going to say you owe it to yourself, you owe it to your mind to hear what that guy has to say. Whether you like Alex Jones or you don't like Alex Jones, go hear this guy. All right? You can find it on YouTube. We've already sent out the K-Files this week. As a matter of fact, we sent out two editions. I sent out a special edition, and then some important information hit the news overseas, and it was not yet being reported here. So I put it in another kind of special edition of the K-Files and started sending it out. As I was sending it out, MSNBC began to report. So I changed the wording in the K-Files and said, instead of saying it's not being reported, I said it's not being widely reported. You need to subscribe if you haven't. It's free. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is someone who's been with us before. He is highly interesting and highly controversial. And you've heard me say, if something isn't controversial, why would we spend 2 hours talking about it? That would be boring, would it not? James Horak, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well, sir. Before we get into what I really want us to talk about tonight, I've got to ask you a question because one of our listeners called in and asked this question on an open line night, and I made the statement that, yes, I had heard you talk something about it, but it was your research, and I would not comment on it. And that when you were ready, if you wanted to make it public, you would. And then I've got an email about it as well, wanting to know. And I'm not going to name a name, but there is a particular ministry that this person had heard that you were doing some research into and wanted to know what you had found. Now, it's up to you if you want to talk about it. It's up to you if you decide you want to hang on and not talk about it until some later date when you're ready to present your information. But I promised I would ask, so there you go.
What I've referred to before as a front for an operation that processes and distributes the heroin from the Golden Triangle and has since the Clintons were in the White House is close at home to me. And over the years, I've uncovered a number of things about this operation. But this gentleman is the biggest TV evangelist in the world. And he is a front for Air America's exploits in distributing and bringing in the heroin from the Golden Triangle and distributing it, and it's Kenneth Copeland.
Okay, now, I want to make very clear that is 100% James Horak, and, you know, I haven't done the research on that. I'm not saying that it is or is not Kenneth Copeland. That's your research, and that's what you have decided. I mean, that's your comment. Now, aren't you somewhat nervous to come out and just say something like that?
No, I've been under surveillance over this for many years. I've dealt with it. I've complained to the ATF. I've had dealings about this before, and you know, it's this individual needs to be brought down.
Okay, well, there you go. I promised I would ask. I did, and Mr. Horak has answered. Okay, now I want to get to the reason that I contacted you and asked you to be on this show, and I want to set this up. You know what this is about, but I want to set this up for our listeners so that they're on the same page with us. I was talking with one of our guests, someone who's been a guest on this show. I was talking with this person on the telephone, and he told me that his theory is that, first of all, there are actual extraterrestrials, but that at least in 90% or higher of the cases where people are saying that they have had contact with extraterrestrials, they've been abducted or they've been contacted in some way by extraterrestrials, he thinks in about 90% or more of the cases, they are not extraterrestrials. They are not ET. He calls them OT. And when I asked, well, what does OT stand for? He said originally terrestrial. And he said these are remnants of previous civilizations that have lived on this planet who were highly technological. These are remnants that survived and that continued to press their technology forward so that now they are excessively advanced of us, and yet they are as much of this planet and from this planet as we are. So that's the setup, and I want to jump in and ask you, what about this theory that there are some originally terrestrial or original terrestrials that are hanging around here on the planet and doing things that cause us to think they are extraterrestrial? What do you think about that?
Well, I know, for instance, that there are blondes here, and but they don't. They're not in the business of abducting. That they were the only lineage to get over the hump here. They are. They never were extraterrestrial. This is their home as much as it is ours, although they have bases elsewhere.
Okay, so what about, let's take the story of Admiral Byrd. He goes to Antarctica with Operation High Jump, and absolutely a massive, massive naval operation. Goes to Antarctica, and the accounts... You know, people say, well, this story is real, and some people say it's not real, but anyway, here it is. He's flying along, and his plane is sort of captured. Well, he sees some area that isn't covered in ice, and he sees... something that looks like a woolly mammoth grazing. He sees trees and vegetation and so forth. Anyway, his plane is captured by, we'll say, a tractor beam. He doesn't use that terminology, but that's what he describes. Something or someone takes control of his plane, and some very strange flying machines come up alongside of him. They communicate to him and tell him, just be calm, everything's okay. And they escort his plane to a place where they land. They go subterranean. They go down through a hole, land down in a hole. And he is escorted then to a meeting with sort of the Grand Master or whatever, the Elder, where he is told that, you know, this is our planet, too. And we've been here a lot longer than you people have. And now that you've been exploding atomic weapons up there on the surface, it's causing disturbance for us. It's very dangerous for us. And now we have an interest. So you need to go back and tell your people to stop that nonsense. All right. And then he's returned to his plane. His plane is lifted back into the air, and soon he's on his way back to his base. That's the story in a nutshell. If that story is true, are those people OTs? And I'm just using the terminology for shortcut. I'm just using the terminology that this person used when he told me his theory. Are these OTs, are they originally terrestrials?
Oh, yes. They survived their own technology. They're the only era terrestrials that have so far. And but now there are two stories here that that are being combined that need to be separated. This didn't Admiral Byrd's let's say abduction. To this tropical valley in Antarctica didn't occur in Operation High Jump. It occurred on his second expedition to Antarctica.
Okay.
And, it wasn't a hole. He didn't go into the inner earth. He went into a valley, and he met with the elder, and it was more or less a philosophical discussion. There were no threats.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until later, when Little America was established and a reactor was put in that wasn't stable, that there became some problems. And then Operation High Jump was a response.
All right, let me let's back up, and there's several questions that come as a result of that. So let's back up, and let me ask you this. Do you accept as reality the story about his meeting with this elder?
Yes, yes.
What makes you think that this is real?
It was in one of the first printings of the first edition of a book that came out in the 30s. And this book was a true rendering of what was in his diary that was rewritten later. And there have been a number of people to over the years to say, yes, that's true.
All right, so you accept as reality then the story about the plane sort of being caught in this tractor beam, and he was taken to this meeting with the elders, or with the elder.
Well, there is a tropical valley in Antarctica, and there are blondes there. I know that, and there's a no-fly zone, and the other nations which have territory in Antarctica have bases there. They leave it alone.
All right, now how do you know that?
I've been there.
You've been to this valley?
Yes.
Have you met the elder?
Yes.
Okay, see, now you never disappoint me, James Horak. You always tell me something that pretty much blows me away. So here it is. You have actually met this elder.
Yes.
When did this happen?
Oh, it happened... the last time it happened was about 22 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known blondes. First time I came across a blonde, I was on liberty from a boot camp in San Diego, and I was with some friends. And a blonde lady came by me, and what surprised me was that nobody noticed how extraordinary she was. She was in high heels, but she still towered over me almost a foot, and had a perfect build, and was exquisite. I mean, she looked like Anita Ekberg.
All right, now you're what, about 6 feet tall?
I was 6 foot three at the time. I'm about 6 foot two and a half now.
Okay. So 6 foot three at the time. She was a foot above you.
Oh, yes.
And nobody else noticed her?
No. I walked out. We were walking through a department store, my friend and his mother and his aunt. And they were going to show me a health food store. I'd never seen one before. And we decided it was on the other street. So we were walking through this department store, and it had two doors. And, a compartment in between two doors.
Mm-hmm.
So they were already outside, and I had been a little slower. And as I was coming up to the first door, this lady walked in and by me, and I'm looking her straight in the eyes. And just never seen anything like this before, and she's smiling. And she goes on, and I walk outside, and I notice that nobody's looking at her. And I turn around, and my friend, I say, True, his last name was True. I say, what do you think of her? And his mother and aunt's looking at me, and they don't have any idea what I'm talking about. And he says, "Oh, her." And then I knew that that there was even more, something more extraordinary. And over the years, I've come across blondes before, and they can psychically block out their extraordinary features, but they are like us. They're blonde. You have a friend that's one, and they all look like, you know, beautiful faces. They're proportionate. They're exquisite. They look like Greek statues in there, and they don't like to wear clothes. And I don't wear clothes.
Well, I have to tell you, that friend of mine that you're talking about, I've never seen that friend but what he had clothes on.
Well, you know, he's trying to be conventional.
Okay.
But he'll probably tell you that that they have that characteristic.
I'll have to ask about that.
Yeah, I've seen them. I've seen them a number of times in their ships, and they're not wearing clothes, men and women, and they are exquisite looking.
All right, now this is 22 years ago. You have this meeting with this elder in a valley, a tropical valley that you're telling us about.
That was my second time to visit there.
Okay, how did you get there?
I was picked up at the time. I lived just outside Fort Worth, and I was coming to work, and I met them, and I wanted to go on to work, but I had a weekend coming up, and so I told them, and they told me where they'd pick me up, and so I met them, and I went to the valley.
All right. You get to the valley. Well, we've got a break coming up. But let me tell you what I'm going to ask you when we come back. One thing I'm going to ask you is, when you get to the valley and you have this meeting with the elder, why does the elder agree to meet with you? Now, don't answer now. We've got this break up on us, and when we come back from break, we'll get your answer. But, you know, I can understand, and don't be offended, but I understand Admiral Byrd, and they want to meet with him. He is, after all, flying an airplane over their territory, or near it. Why did they want to meet with James Horak? We'll find out when we come back. Okay, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is James Horak, and when we went to break, you had just told us that you were working either in or near Fort Worth at the time this happened, 22 years ago. You had a contact with these persons who you describe as the blondes, and you wanted to go with them. And you sort of made an appointment. You said, "Look, you know, I have to get to work, but I've got this weekend coming up." And they said, "Okay, well, we'll pick you up at certain time, certain place." You go there, and they take you to Antarctica. Now, was this in the summer or winter months in Fort Worth?
Spring.
In the spring. Okay. Obviously, when you got to Antarctica, it was winter everywhere except in this valley. And this valley, you say, is tropical, right?
Yes.
Okay. And I had asked the question, because you had told us that you had met with the elder. So why did the elder agree to meet with you?
Well, it was his idea. It was a matter of, they were, trying to get me to agree to certain things that the extended community wanted.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you mean by the extended community?
There, the ET observes an extended community that's about as close as I can translate it, but it's an agreement. It's a number of systems that agree. I mean, this is literally thousands of cultures that hold together on agreements, and they maintain a stable relationship throughout this part of the galaxy. And there, I mean, there's more life, more intelligent life out there than you can imagine, and it's all pretty well organized. There's no war. There is no famine, no disease. It's exquisite, and I hope to one day see Earth-based humanity a member of it.
Okay, now, the I thought I understood earlier that the Elder and his people are not ETs, but they are OTs.
But they're in the extended community.
Oh, I see. Okay, so they've been accepted into this extended community.
Yep.
Okay. So at your meeting, you know, Bird shared with us the basic message that the Elder gave to him. Is there a basic message that the Elder gave to you that you can share with us?
At the time, I was kind of considered not doing my job, and they were upset. The extended community wanted to know what was in my mind, what I was about, what I was doing, what I was considering doing, and had I gone native and all that crap.
Okay.
Someone was to chew me out.
So are you OT or are you ET?
I'm neither. Tell you the truth. I mean, I'm here. I'm a human in a human form in a human body, but I have other paths. I have other things that I've done and been. But no, I may have been when I was very small. I may have been an ET. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, this civilization that you're talking about as being down there in Antarctica, this is something that, based on what you said earlier, it would appear that the U.S. military and intelligence services, as well as other countries' militaries and intelligence services, they know that it's there, they know that it exists, and there's a no-fly zone. Why is there a no-fly zone? Are they afraid of these people?
Oh, yeah.
Why? Are these warlike people?
No. You just they can defend themselves, that's all. And they want to be left alone. They don't interfere, and they don't want to be interfered with.
Mm-hmm.
But they are concerned about the planet, and they're concerned about the trends that are going on, and they're concerned about what may happen in the pretty well immediate future.
Did they say anything to you at that time, 22 years ago? Did they say anything to you that is relevant in terms of things that are happening today? For instance, did they warn you about any of these disasters, the tsunami that hit Japan, or the nuclear disaster that's happening in Japan? Did they warn you about any of that stuff?
Well, they didn't have to. They They wanted to see, of course, what my concerns were, if they were, if we shared them, if I was doing my job, and whether I had fallen prey to something or other, fallen off the earth or whatever, because I really had made myself scarce.
Mm-hmm. So are they keeping tabs on you? Is that what the deal is?
No, they just they know that I deal with EMVs, that I'm a liaison for the EMVs, and they want they're anxious to have things resolved, because they're not happy with the madness that is going on with the powers that be on this planet, and they want to know why I indulge what I do, and I've had this from other ETs too, so.
So it's basic friendly interrogation.
Pretty much. They're very neat people. I mean, I'm sure that your friend has told you that they don't have an aggressive bone in their body.
Okay, now you have referred to them as OT, which of course means they are from here, but from a previous civilization long before the Sumerian civilization. So what are they? I mean, I know, okay, they're terrestrial. Would you say they are human?
Yes, in fact, they have the same genetic number as Earth-based humans. They just have carried genetics. They don't interbreed with Earth-based humans. Let me put it that way.
Okay. Are they the cause of the tropical climate there? Or if they left that valley and went somewhere else, would that valley continue to be tropical?
Only if they wanted it. They have the technology to create that condition anywhere. They could create it on Jupiter.
Okay, so they are the cause of the tropical climate in this valley.
Yes.
Is this anywhere, this valley, is it anywhere near Lake Vostok?
No, but there is the anomaly in Lake Vostok is not associated with them.
Have they said anything to you about this anomaly?
Yes.
What have they told you about it?
Well, the last time that I communicated, which was about 10 years ago, it was before 2000, which would be about 12 years ago. They were upset that they were the ones that told me that the engine that had been taken from Europe had been placed in that lake, and I didn't believe it at first, until I read some things about the anomaly there, and then I realized it was probably true, and they wanted to know. Well, it was used as another point of contention for why I wasn't doing my job.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, this anomaly that's in Lake Vostok, is that the engine that you're talking about? Or was this anomaly already there, and then the engine that you're talking about was also placed in the lake? How did that transpire?
Well, there was an engine there. And when the Red Army was clearing out before the fall of the Soviet Union, they took this one. And I don't know how they got it to, got it there. This thing is 1,200 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved it, and they put it, I have no idea what was in their mind, but they put it close in proximity with the other one, and that's not good.
What is this engine? What are we talking about? Is this one of these moon shafts?
Yes.
All right, and is it still there?
Well, I feel that it is, but then again, they could be in the process of moving it. I know that they've got an expeditionary force down there with the United States, and they say they are drilling there or whatever. What I think they're trying to do is finally to come to their senses. They're trying to move it, but then they may be trying to make things worse, like they've done all over the world with Fukushima and weather management. Management. That's a funny.
All right. Now, what's the purpose of this engine that was already in Vostok?
Well, it was part of a grid of these engines that maintain a parity between the moon and the Earth, because the moon is unstable, the Earth is unstable, and these engines maintain an artificial parity. That's why there's a constant magnetic anomaly that changes in both on the Earth and the moon in conjunction with each other, which astrophysicists know about. And the moon wants to come into the Earth, or it wants to go out, and so they have to make these adjustments with engines that are in the moon, with respect to these what people are calling the moon shafts. I just call them engines. But the moon shaft comes from the shape of the grotto that's in front of the cave where my great uncle found this one in particular.
Now, the one that he found, is that the one they moved?
Yes, yes.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Mr. James Horak. And James, when we went away for break, you had just begun to mention about the object, engine, moonshaft that your uncle found. And folks, if you want to read up on that, just Google Antonin, A-N-T-O-N-I-N, Antonin Horak, H-O-R-A-K, you will find the information there. Interesting, though, now that was in, he found that in Romania, right?
Well, I'm not sure at the time. This was during the occupation of the Germans. It was in the Tatra Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And that area, I don't know how that was partitioned after the war under the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
So I rather think that it was either Romania or maybe even Czechoslovakia.
Well, I know there are several accounts of this written by different people, two or three different accounts written by different people out there on the Internet. One of the accounts was, I think, written by you.
Yes.
But the reason I said that was interesting, one of those accounts says it was in Romania, And
it probably was because I hate to be tied down to that. I've never been there.
Mm-hmm.
So
at the time that I read that first, James, I was still married to my second wife, and she's from Romania. And I had a place in Romania at the time. And I think that's what caught my eye as I scanned the article, was it said something about Romania. And then I read the article, never ever dreaming that I would come into contact with get to know anybody related to that story. And then here, years and years later, I met you. And it was just kind of a funny coincidence. But it's, folks, that's Antonin Horak. If you want to check that out, do a little research on your own, you will find that to be a very, very fascinating story. And he is the uncle of our guest tonight.
Well, he's my great-uncle.
Great-uncle, okay. All right, now, I want to go back to Antarctica, the home of these OTs. Is this area, was this their, like, their original homeland, and they just decided to stay there after whatever cataclysm caused Antarctica to become icebound? Is that what happened? Or did they move there?
They had a worldwide culture. They had a worldwide culture. Did have some difficulty, and there was some separation. But they had a worldwide culture, and it lasted about 20,000 years before, at a high level, before they joined the extended community, and there was a separation, and the remnants of the other part that were not blondes survived, and they continued another civilization, and then that extincted, but there were survivors, and the same old story all over again.
Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm getting at is this group that's living in Antarctica, is that where they've always been living, that group?
No.
Do you know where they were?
This is out of the way. This is out of the way of Earth-based humanity, and that's why they're there.
Do you think that the Third Reich found this place? Do you think they discovered it?
No, but I think that there was some contact much earlier than that. I think the idea of the Teutonic Knights is based upon some kind of contact with blondes. I think the idea of Aryan supremacy was kind of based on that contact.
You know, I'm jealous of these people. I mean, I hate to admit it, but I am. I'm jealous of these people. They are the blondes, and people that meet them think they're gods. They think they are the Teutonic Knights. They think, you know, everybody wants to be like the blondes. And I'm jealous. I wonder when someone is going to, have that sort of affinity for and affection for the balds.
Well, to tell you the truth, I wouldn't want to party with them.
Yeah, but see, I'm bald. I can't be one of the blondes. I'm bald. And I think people out there ought to say, well, you know, those bald guys, they probably are gods.
Well, I think the size is what did it. But they weren't the only people of that size that have lived on Earth and have a connection to an earlier lineage.
Are all of them tall like that?
Well, everyone that I've seen, the women average around 6'8", 6'9". The men get up there to 7'4". I've never seen one that I'd say was much more than a foot or whatever taller than me, but they're extremely well built. They're statuesque.
Now, you said they're able to defend themselves. Do they have high technology?
Oh, yes.
How are they able to do that without factories?
Well, as a member of an extended community, you have access to just about anything you want, really. I mean, it's wonderful, and I don't think they want for anything. I mean, they don't need factories. These people don't know what an economy is. They just have whatever they want, whatever they need, and they're not aggressive. ETs are not aggressive.
All right, now, if they don't have an economy, it would seem then, well, when you say an economy, I assume you mean there's no money, no stock market, no gold trading, things like that. But certainly they have to have something to barter with in order to exchange for what they need from this extended family.
It doesn't operate on trade or anything. It's just whatever if you have no profit taking, if your means of production are totally based on need and not extravagance, then these idea of trade and barter and money and economy, I mean, just don't enter into it. Extended community, we're talking about thousands of systems. We're talking probably, I would say, in the neighborhood of 12,000 different cultures. And, they wouldn't know what you were talking about if you said, well, I'll trade this to you. They'll just give it to you. You know, if you're a member of the extended community and you go somewhere and you see something you like, and you make an issue about it, they'll just give it to you. They're like the Chinese used to be.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here, and my sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away during that first hour, but I'm glad you're here now. And we are talking this evening with Mr. James Horak. Every single time he's on this show, he says something that absolutely catches me off guard and surprises me, and this is no different. And at the moment, we are talking about this civilization of people that live in a tropical valley in Antarctica. Now, Admiral Byrd talked about it. James Horak says it's true, and he's been there. And he's met with that elder that Admiral Byrd met with. Well, now, let me find out about that. Is it the same guy, the same elder?
Oh, yeah. Just one of them. He's the only blonde I ever met that had a sense of humor.
All right. How old do these people live to be?
they can live to be 144 years old or thereabouts. I know the elder's over 100. I mean, I imagine now he was over 100 when the last time I saw him, so he's 122 at least.
At least. All right.
Good-looking man. Good-looking man.
Okay, so I want to go back to Operation High Jump. Operation High Jump was supposed to last for between 6 to 8 months. It lasted, I think, about 6 weeks, something like that. And Admiral Byrd, when he came out of Operation High Jump, apparently was pretty shaken up because he said that, man, the next time we have to fight a war, it's going to be against people who can travel from ships that can travel from pole to pole at incredible speed. Did he, for some reason, get into an engagement with this civilization and get his tail whipped?
Well, let's just say they made a demonstration. They vaporized a ship, and that was all there was to it.
And why did they vaporize a ship? You're talking about a naval ship?
Yes. Icebreaker.
Why did they do that?
Make a point.
Okay, but what is it that necessitated making a point? Was Byrd and company, were they attacking?
A military expedition to fight them.
Why?
Oh, I think that the warning they gave about Little America in that reactor, I think that was taken to mean as a threat or something, and who knows what the Pentagon the leaders at the time, what was in their mind, but it was just stupid. I mean, they should have just left them alone. They shouldn't have put they didn't have the technology for that reactor to be there safely at the time.
I'm not so sure that there is technology for a reactor to be anywhere safely now. Because, you know, if the earth cracks up underneath it, you get Fukushima. Regardless of what caused that earthquake and the tsunami caused the problem at Fukushima. And
yep.
So I don't know that there's really a safe place to put one of those beasts. Okay, so Operation High Jump, you think, was a response to a warning that these OTs had given about the reactor at Little America. So let's go back to the reactor at Little America. What's the problem with it?
It's unstable. And, it would have created quite an environmental impact if it had actually had a meltdown, but it was unstable, and they shut that down. And then you didn't hear anything about Little America anymore.
All right, who shut it
down?
I
remember when I was a boy, Little America was talked about all the time, and it was a big deal and everything, and then you didn't hear anything more about it.
Who shut it down? Did we shut it down, or did the OTs?
No, the OTs didn't. They just I think the reactor was unstable and probably created some kind of radiation problem, and then they contaminated the area. But they were able to shut it down before it went China, and or else there probably would have been a lot of trouble with the blondes down there. But they have a Mexican standoff now, and they have had for a number of years.
Well, I understand what you're saying. I find it hard to conceptualize that there's a real Mexican standoff. If they can vaporize a ship, then we may be standing off, but I don't think they're nervous.
Well, they're concerned about the instability of the planet. The problems that is affecting them, they can go elsewhere. They've done it before. So, this is their home too, and they'd like to see the mess cleaned up.
Do they have the technology to clean it up?
Oh, they could. They could clean it up, but you don't save the people from themselves. I mean, Earth-based humanity is an experiment, and it's not going well, and there's a cutoff point, and the sixth extinction may be coming up. I don't want it to. I don't want to see that. It pains me a great deal. The last time this happened, I went into seclusion for an awfully long time.
Do you think that they know what's coming and when? By they, I mean the OTs. Do they know what's coming and when?
Well, they have a unified consciousness, and they can use probability just in their thoughts. And, what you take, what scientists use computers to do, they can do with their reasoning. And it's a high probability that they see, they know that the Earth isn't stable, and that without that operation in Utah, the Earth wouldn't last very long at all.
What operation are we talking about in Utah?
The one that I've mentioned that's in, that's just, due north of the LaSalle Mountain Range.
Well, I know what we're talking about, but we have new listeners every night, so they maybe wouldn't have heard your previous shows. So describe for us what's going on there.
There's an extensive EMV operation, and that the military's known about it for a long time, and they have an underground base in the LaSalle Mountains, just to observe and monitor this operation. It's extensive. It's out on the plains. But there is a canyon that where I'd say three or four times a week from about 1:30 in the morning up until daylight, there's observable activity of EMV appendages driving machinery that's very deep and that goes down in, very deep into the crust of the Earth. And this operation is twofold, and one of the things it does is reinforce a weakness that is in this a critical weakness in the plate tectonics of the Earth, and they cushion that movement, or else Fukushima would be a lot more of a disaster than it was. The Little Madrid Fault Zone is stabilized by what's going on there, or the powers that be probably would have already done something there. They're trying, and a way of remediating structural insufficiencies of the Earth's crust with the mantle.
Okay, now this is activity by the EMVs. What's the relationship? And that's the electromagnetic vehicle.
Yes.
These are the vehicles that Dr. Berggren talked about in the rings of Saturn. Okay, so, and there are pictures of them in the rings of Saturn. All right, now, what's the relationship between these original terrestrials, these OTs, and the EMVs?
Well, the OT, ET knows about them, and they have a respect for them. They can't approach them, but they communicate with them through me. And sometimes there's an exchange say, for instance, if something happens, they need that kind of energy that the EMVs can deliver. They'll talk to me, and I'll arrange for EMVs to be part of a project to repair something that needs repairing. It's like what they're doing in Utah and elsewhere. But these are friends of mine thought of a name for them, designers of the solar system, and that's pretty much what they are.
You know, you've been with us on several occasions, James, and we've talked about these EMVs each time. Sometimes in depth we've talked about them. But usually we just touch on it, and they're part of the picture, and we move on. But, you know, I have given some thought to at least the way I understand what you've said about these EMVs. And this may be incorrect, but it's how I understand what they're up to, how they function. It seems to me that they function on a very large scale, very similarly to the way nanobots function. In that, you know, a nanobot is programmed to do something, it's task-driven, it goes and does it, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. It goes ahead and does what it's supposed to do. And that's kind of the way I understand what you've told us about these electromagnetic vehicles.
Well, I know they have been perceived in the creative consciousness of a lot of science fiction writers. If you look at some of the science fiction movies, you see things that are very similar that that have a task and that have a different kind of consciousness about what they are and what they're doing. When I say task driven, I mean that's they're dedicated to a specific series of actions, and nothing's going to prevent them from doing them.
Mm-hmm. All right, so my guest, I don't know if you heard my guest last night, but my guest that was on last night.
I was impressed with Mr. Jensen.
Well, good. He said that he thinks that about every 7,000, and he said that's not a hard, fast figure, but on average, about every 7,000 years, the Earth goes through an upheaval, wipes the slate clean, and there are a few people that survive it. Those remnants start new civilizations, and we start all over again. What did you think about that?
Well, I think, first of all, let me say that he's way ahead of conventional wisdom. Way ahead. He recognizes evidence that they won't even look at. He, in many respects, he's actually captured a lot of ground. I would say that the basis that his time frame is based on the water table of the oceans, and there are some other factors involved that he wouldn't know about, but that if you look at a little broader at other anomaly that are associated with those canals, like If you look at the terrace plots in the Amazon basin, and these are squares that of about 3 or 4 acres, and they cover hundreds of thousands of acres. They have ditches segmenting them, and then they these ditches are fed by these canals that he's discovered in North America. So what we have here is we have a culture that extends all the way down there, and that was these plots were growing food. So that'll instead of the 200 million that he projects, let's put a figure at about 3 billion.
Okay, so folks that missed the show last night, I had asked him what was the population around the Atlantic Rim, and he at the time of the last great catastrophe that wiped them out, and he said that he estimated it was somewhere between, I think he said, 200-300 million up to maybe 500 million or more. You're saying 3 billion.
Altogether in South America, the Atlantic Rim, all of North America, and I'd say two-thirds of South America was involved in that culture. The one thing that where he takes his time frame from is the rise and fall of the oceans. What I would add to that is the glacial periods that are in between. They are irregular, and glacial buildup and decline of glaciers in the poles actually are what's responsible for polar movements. And these glacial ages are not regular, and they're going to involve lowering and raising of the ocean levels. So when you work that in, you factor it in, and you make allowances for that, then your figures change. And so we're talking, you know, he says 7,000 years. I would put a figure closer to 28,000 to 30,000 between civilizations that come and go, extinctions, 5,000 years, beginning of another culture where they get to a point where they're building cities and monuments. 20,000 to 30,000 years at the most, varying, and then you have an extinction, and then you have 5,000 years, and then that's generally the pattern. Now, it's not exact, but it's roughly a pattern.
Are there other OT civilizations other than the one in Antarctica? Are there other OT civilizations on this planet?
There have been. Yes, they've been persecuted and slaughtered and so forth, and right up through the Middle Ages, they were still remnants.
How do we know about that?
In paintings, if you go to a good art museum and you look at Renaissance and pre-Renaissance paintings, you'll see cone heads, and you'll see people that have a greenish tint to their skin or bluish, being slaughtered.
Do we have any written records of that as well?
Oh, no. Not unless you get into the catacombs below the Vatican, or get into the Jesuit library, or get into the secret archives of the Vatican.
Do you think they've got them?
They've got the histories? Yeah. Sure they do.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could get into the Etruscan room at Cambridge.
What would we find there?
You find the histories, the true histories. Because they tell you that the Etruscans, their language can't be translated, and that's just a lie, because the language of the Etruscans was Latin, and they gave it to the Romans.
So if you read Latin, you can read Etruscan.
Up out of thin air, you know, Remus and Romulus, that myth.
Uh-huh. All right, but at the current time, at the present time, there's only one OT civilization on Earth, and that's the one in Antarctica. Is that correct, or are there others?
In the inner Earth, there are some cavities in the Earth, and from time to time, people find very unusual people that have survived and adjusted to living in subterranean regions. The green-skinned people that were found in a French village back in the 19th century, they crop up from time to time, but of course they all remember when they were persecuted and massacred, so they don't know things have changed, and maybe they really haven't changed.
Well, I'm not a religious person, but I listen to a lot of different people on a lot of different subjects, and I heard a preacher say one time that if all of us woke up in the morning the same color worldwide, pick a color, doesn't matter, we all woke up the same color, by noon we'd find some other reason to start a war.
Like the shape of your head or which hand do you use and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and it's a pretty curious thing. What we make such big differences over, and what we're willing to kill over, it's kind of astounding, really. But I've been alive long enough that I know we are that way, and I know that we cannot be viewed by outside civilizations as very much above barbaric.
That's true. I get told that a lot.
Yeah. All right. Now, let's say that the Earth goes through this horrendous cataclysm, and that most of civilization, most of the population is wiped out. Now, you know that I don't subscribe to that. You know, because we've talked about it. I think we will go through some horrendous cataclysms, but I don't think that we're going to get down to 1 million people. I mean, there's going to be a sizable amount of our population that survives this, in my opinion. There'll be a sizable amount of the population that doesn't. But what about the OTs? Are they going to survive it? Are they insulated from the cataclysms? We have a break taking over, so you can answer that when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this. To the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking this evening with Mr. James Horak, and we're talking about OTs as opposed to ETs, originally terrestrials, or original terrestrials, as opposed to extraterrestrial. And before I bring James back on to answer that question, let me throw this out for those of you who are new to all of this. If you're new to all of this, you may think when I say extraterrestrial, you think of a little gray guy driving a flying saucer. A lot of people do, and that's because they don't stop to think, and you haven't stopped to think, but if you do stop to think, you will realize that Terra, is the Latin name for this planet. Extra terra means apart from this planet. That's all it means. Doesn't mean a little gray guy driving a flying saucer. It just means something that's not from this planet. That's all it means. But in contrast to extraterrestrial, we're talking about original terrestrials. Previous high-tech, highly sophisticated civilization, remnants of which Mr. Horak is telling us about, still living, extant, instead of extinct, extant, in Antarctica. But I have asked a question, and the question is, if all of this calamity takes place, as so many people are predicting, if it does take place, and if, as so many are predicting, it wipes out a big portion of the population here on the planet, what happens to the OTs in Antarctica? Are they insulated from that?
No, they'll move. It's not like the first time they've done it.
How do they move?
Just leave.
How?
Well, there are probably 300 or 400 families there now, and they can be out of there. And
what do they have? They have spaceships. They have ships that are capable of spaceflight.
Oh, sure. Sure, they can be outside this solar system in an hour.
Wow, that's moving. That is moving. Voyager is right at the edge of our solar system. It's been traveling for what, 30 years now? And it's now within 5 to 6 years of being free of the solar system after about 30 years of travel. And you're saying they can be out of here and out of the solar system in an hour.
Well, I'll tell you how sophisticated their technology is. They're inside their ships, if you look at their ship, it's maybe 60 feet to 90 feet, depending on whether it's a big one or a little one, 90 feet in diameter or 60 feet in diameter, depending. And if you go inside, it looks like Grand Central Station in there.
So the dimensions inside are a great deal different from what we see on the outside.
Absolutely. it's really neat.
You know, that's sort of like Doctor Who's phone booth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, what's interesting is that with rare exception, whatever some of these people think of, science fiction or whatever, is realized.
How much of it do you think was realized before the science fiction writers realized it? In other words, how much of it existed and somehow they came into knowledge of it?
I think that happened. I know what you're asking, and let me just jump a little bit ahead. I think they are the creative mind.
Now that's interesting, isn't it? That's just curious. All right. Wow. Beep, and he's gone. Well, all right. We'll try to get him back. Hang on. Okay, well, folks, it would appear to me that someone did not want him to tell us that. Maybe not. Maybe it was just something weird on the phone line out there somewhere, but just as he's about to tell us about how this all this high tech gets into science fiction, beep, and he's gone. But we're going to try, let me try one more time very quickly to see if we can get him on the line here. Yeah, we'll just see if we can get him back. I'm going to let you hear it ring. At least you'll know we're trying. And what happened?
I have no idea. It wasn't my modem or anything. All of a sudden, I just hear a ringing instead of anything else. And so finally, I just hung the phone up and waited for you to call.
Well, I'll tell you what. On this side of it, what we heard was you started to tell us about how you think all of this high-tech stuff got into the science fiction world. And just as you started, we heard a beep, and you were gone.
Well, you know, I watch science fiction. I read it, not just American, but Soviet. And I see over and over again, I see people thinking of things that exist, that I know exist. It amazes me. It's like they had a connection to genetic knowledge or a collective consciousness. People right here.
You don't think that maybe some inside information was leaked by some person in the government to these science fiction writers?
I think we give these people inside the government too much credit. I think they're more confused than anything else. I mean, they don't want you to know that. They want you to think they have it pretty well thought out. They've got a handle on it and everything. Nah. No. No.
Okay, so then you think that the science fiction writers are tapping into sort of a consciousness field out there?
I do. I mean, Arthur C. Clarke is a good example, there are so many others, some Czech writers or Soviet writers or now Russian. Yes. I mean, I'm constantly amazed. It's like they have priori knowledge.
Are you aware, since you read a lot of science fiction, are you aware of any science fiction that has dealt with this tropical valley and this civilization of OTs?
Oh, no. Oh, no. And another thing, I'm sure that everyone's familiar with Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that always disgusted me about Star Trek is that it was selling the New World Order ideal. And then, on top of that, if you'll notice in Star Trek, they never discuss or resolve the issue of our UFOs.
Yeah, never, that's right.
Never. Never. That always disgusted me.
So, let's talk about our UFOs. Are our UFOs from off-world, or are the UFOs that people are seeing, are these the craft of the OTs who are living in Antarctica, or is it both?
Well, there's a way of distinguishing. I mean, I can look at a good picture and tell you if it's blondes. Their craft are very typical, and then their crafts from all over. I mean. At Kolaris, the officer in charge, and this is one culture, and they had 25 or 30 different craft, and he drew them all. And these are what they actually saw. And so you had one culture that had 25 or 30 different craft, different kinds, shapes, sizes, and probes. Rendlesham Forest, those were probes. Those were off-Earth probes.
Okay, so now let's talk about the ETs, because tonight we've been talking about OTs versus ETs, so let's go to the ETs for a moment. The ETs being extraterrestrial, why are they sending probes here? If they have this sort of relationship, this extended community relationship with the OTs, can't the OTs give them whatever information they want? Why do they need probes?
This is a phenomena. This has a spectacular interest to members of the extended community, and that's from all over. And it's an event. What's going to happen next? I can remember that the time I spoke with an ET once, and he wanted to know why I was so enamored with Earth-based humanity. They're savages. And I said, read this. And I gave him a excellent novel, and he read it, and it moved him. And he says, these people can do this? And I said, yeah.
Okay, so they're here as spectators.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I mean, look, if you're over the hump and thousands of years go by, you don't have no struggle, things are worked out, you have no aberrancy, no crime, none of these things, and then you see this intensity. It's a draw. I mean,
we've got top billing in the galaxy, huh?
You do. I mean, I can't explain it any other way. But there's science, scientific interests, social scientific interests. There's all kinds of things. I imagine somewhere if they traded and had an economy, you could sell front row seats here for an arm and a leg.
Okay, well then that sort of makes them fit the category of what we've heard about in a lot of ancient texts. Lots of ancient texts, including the Bible, but not only the Bible, refer to them as watchers.
Yeah.
Is that what that's about?
Well, in a way, you did a show with a guy by the name of Sims,
We unfortunately have to step away for break, but we'll come back to that question, are they the Watchers, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are now on Final Approach. We have only a few minutes left in tonight's show. And my guest is James Horak. Now, James, when we went away for break, I had asked the question, are these ETs watchers? What do you think?
Remember the show that you did with Mr. Sims, and he was talking about those little spheres that this little girl had in her nose.
Mm-hmm.
And this wasn't a classic abduction experience, and it involved grays or EBs, and that's the first time that I'd seen that sort of thing, and that indicated to me that ET had taken over some EBs and used them to give man a leg up in technology to teach them a formula for electrum that has been lost. And it goes much further than a metal. when that happened, you know, that was another case. I see a growing concern among ETs that are well-wishing towards Earth-based humanity, and that wasn't true as much before. So that I was overjoyed because you know, to have these people as well-meaning towards humans here. That's good.
Okay, now when we contrast the OTs to the ETs, the OTs seem to have the attitude, leave us alone. The ETs seem to have the attitude, hey, we want to watch this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's something that the blondes have seen. You know, the blondes kind of put out with humanity here. Can't blame them.
So they're just sort of fed up with us.
Yep.
Do the ETs look on them a great deal differently than they look upon the rest of us?
Well, the blondes are members of the extended community. They don't have any beef with them or anything. The blondes are here because this is where they reached a high point in culture, got over the bump, and went on, and they keep a base here, but most of their culture is elsewhere.
All right. Yeah, you said earlier that they have some bases elsewhere. Where else would they have bases?
Well, and you probably know about Venus. They have a presence on the moon. They have a presence outside the solar system, and they don't have their own planet. But that could change. That could change if something happens here and they decide to leave for good. But they're a kind of more nomad than most other ETs. And they've always wanted to have a connection with Earth. So, and like I say, they've done it before, and may not be anything to come back to.
Mm-hmm. Now, have they ever lived on Mars? I'm talking about the OTs.
Well, they've had bases there. They were there when the canals were green, and not that they were there any heavier than they are here, but they had a presence on Mars, and they have presence on Venus now, and you know, a lot of they're Earth-based. There are humans that were once Earth-based that are on Venus now, have a colony, but they're different, or they think they're different. They have unified consciousness, and they look on people here as savages. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're the most unforgiving, ironically.
Well, I'll tell you something. I find all of this to be really interesting. And, of course, we can't go down to the library and get books about it, and we can't get the government to give us documents about it. Apparently, they don't have any that explain it. And so there will be people, I'm sure, who will say, well, it's a fascinating story, but where's the proof? Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're a fascinating story. Where's the proof? You know, the point is that there's very little in our realm that you can actually prove. You just get to a point where you present enough evidence, and then someone has to say, okay, I believe that evidence is sufficient. So you have to make up your own mind about this, folks. It's always interesting when we have James Horak on. I will tell you this, ladies and gentlemen. Before I met him personally, we had had some phone conversations, and he had told me some things that some very abnormal things, paranormal things, that go on around his part of the world. Well, I finally got a chance to go spend a little bit of time with him and see for myself. And I can tell you that a great many of the things he told me about, I saw. Things that you would think could only exist in science fiction. Now you may say, well, that's your testimony. I don't believe that. And I don't care. I understand. And I don't mean I don't care. I do mean that, but I don't mean it in a snide way. I just mean I understand. But I have seen some amazing things that I never thought could exist. I've seen some amazing things that I never thought would exist, except in science fiction. And he told me about them, and now I've seen them. So you have to make up your own mind what you think about what he said here tonight, but I think one thing you will come to agree with, and that is it is fascinating. Whether you think it's real or not is another issue, but it is fascinating. James, I want to thank you for being with us tonight, and I hope you'll stay with me on the telephone here for just the next couple of minutes as I bring this in for a close. But thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Kevin. I'll stay.
All right. Well, there you have it, folks. That's a wrap for this evening. James Horak always, always says something that knocks the ball out of the park. And tonight was no different. I hope that you have enjoyed it. Now, I want to urge you to do two things. Number one, you need to subscribe to the K-Files. If you're not already subscribed, do so. It's free. Second thing, if you're not a member, why not? It's not but 23 cents a day. Why aren't you a member? If you were a member, you could get all the goodies, including all of the archives. You'd have the, you get to watch the show, etc. And a third thing, we need your help. If you like what you hear on this show and you like what we're doing, we need your help. It is only member-supported or listener-supported. Let me change that. It's listener-supported. We do not play commercial spots on this show. So if you want us here night after night, we need you to be there for us as well. Click that donate button and help us out. It's important. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.